Welcome in. Glad you're along for the ride on a very special Thursday. 2 to 4 today. All our Thursdays in the fall are. We're live from Showtime Sports Cards and Collectibles here on Phillips Highway, right at the bottom of Shad Road. This place is magnificent. It's big and clean and just about perfect for a collector, isn't it? Every time we come
Absolutely.
In here, it's got just the right feel. You grew up a collector, so you know all about this, and you've been in here a bunch.
I have, and this is the best place that I've ever seen. My son Jackson loves it. We came in here. Avery was with us as well, and they took such great care of us. It was unbelievable. You know what a big Drew Brees fan Jackson
is,
and so we came in here to get a couple Drew Brees cards for him for part of his birthday, and he loved the experience, and it is fantastic. They have anything you would want, they've got.
Really, anybody you root for here, and the Trevor Lawrence collection is fantastic. There's more Trevor Lawrence stuff in here. Trevor Lawrence Jaguars stuff, shirts and signed Jaguars footballs and all. So if you want it, it's in here. Have you seen that Thurman Munson? I've been staring at that Thurman Munson. If you're a baseball collector, that thing is fantastic. So there's more good stuff in here. So come on by. It's going to be a fun day. We're going to be here 2 to 4. Then we're going to stick around a little bit afterwards. We'd love to meet you and say hello if you're coming by in the time afterwards. Until the real star, Josh Scobie, shows up, then we're just bit players and Brooks once Josh shows up. But Josh will do an autograph signing from 5 to 7. We'll all be here. It's just a great place. What a great way to kick off football season. It's the perfect day to come here. The Bucks and the Cowboys tonight, so I'm excited about it.
You've already been shopping, right, Frank?
You know what? I asked JD if he could track down something for me that I'm trying to get and that I really want. And I've seen him. What I want is one of the original Jaguar helmets, the silver one. Do you remember those? They couldn't use it. Turned out they couldn't use the logo.
Right. Correct, because it was too much like the car company.
And JD said, and you know, JD, he says he'll find it for me. So it'll be out there somewhere. So if it's what you have, and if what you want isn't in here, they'll find it for you. But everything is in here. The Baselli shirt over there, Hayes, I'm going to buy that for you. The Pride of the Jaguar shirt right there.
Great.
That's his SC shirt.
I know.
That would be like a crop top on him now, though.
Yeah, if that.
I would be proud to own it.
Yeah, if that. So yeah. the Baselli USC shirts. They have so much stuff in here.
Do you think all of your baseball teams are represented here?
Yeah. Well, you know, yes. Yes, I do. By the way,
12 now?
After the Astros lost, like someone asked on Twitter, who's the next team? You know, I've always loved the Bay Area. Okay, so I always loved California. So, by the way, were you watching the Rays-Red Sox game at the time?
I fell asleep. But I watched it today.
The Rays lost, so next time they'll lose
2-1
is in February, because they win about 12 out of every 13 games, so they finally lost 2-1, and I didn't watch the game. I just happened to be. I literally was just clicking it over. I was literally just clicked it over. It's 2-1 in the top of the ninth, and I figured, well, the Rays will win because they always win. Somebody will come up and hit something, and went Joey Wendell. Two on, nobody out. Joey Wendell hits a rope into right center field. The center fielder, I don't even know who that is, but the center fielder for the Red Sox comes over and makes an awful play on it. Ball goes under his glove. Did you see this highlight?
No.
It goes to the warning track. Hunter Renfroe, who was on the Rays last year.
Correct, which is why I was so surprised when I saw the play that Joey Wendell tried to extend it from a double to a triple, because he knows the arm of Renfroe.
And so Renfroe picks it up at the base of the warning track. One step. It was like Clemente. Remember how Clemente would, you've seen all the highlights. He would take a throw. He would take one step. Renfroe takes one step and throws out Wendell one hopper to third base. It's one of the best throws you've seen in years. And so so the Red Sox, but it was nothing better than my man Hacker talking baseball smack. Hacker talking baseball smack to Red Sox Nation. Okay? That needs no analysis, does it?
That's perfection.
That is perfection.
There's the Sistine Chapel, and then there is Hacker
talking,
taunting Red Sox.
Hacker
fans
talking
on Twitter.
Baseball smack to Red Sox Nation was just spectacular.
The center fielder's Enrique Hernandez.
Yeah, made an awful play. Yeah. Made an awful play, but that was. I see Hacker gets on. He's all mad at the Red Sox Nation. Oh, that was beautiful. God bless
I think
him.
Hacker lives to fire up Twitter, whether it's Knowles Twitter, whether it's Red Sox
he's
Twitter.
He's Rays fan now. He's
right, but
in.
I mean, in general, I think whether it's people, you know, who just want to talk smack about anything.
I think you may have fired up Saints fan Twitter.
Right, that the end zones are painted with Saints colors.
I just love the fact, and I love him, but the fact, he said Red Sox Nation was going, how do you find Red Sox Nation? Did you go on Red Sox Twitter? You know, I wouldn't know where Reds.
Maybe Red Sox fans were tweeting him directly. I don't
maybe
know.
That could.
Well,
be
Heidi's a Red Sox fan.
Yeah, that was it.
His wife.
Was, yeah, and I think Heidi and I'm not sure about this, but I think she's like legit, right? Hasn't she been a Red Sox fan like for a long time? I mean, she's from Maine, you know, so she's. I mean, I think she kind of grew up as a Red Sox fan. So God bless his soul. A lot of things to talk about today on the program. Bucks and Cowboys tonight. That's freaking fantastic. I can't wait. I'm going to watch every play. I'm going to watch every moment. We're going to talk a little bit today about one of the quarterbacks in the game. Okay, one of the quarterbacks in the game has 7 rings. He is probably considered the greatest football player of all time, greatest quarterback of all time. But I'm going to talk about the other guy who hasn't practiced at all. And what to expect from the other guy, I think, is interesting. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think he's a great player.
He's a great.
Where is he going to be
at? He's a really good player, and he's a certainly well-paid player. But what do we think? What is Dak? How good is Dak? And is he representative of? Is he the most representative of Dan Mullen tutelage than anybody? Is he the poster child for it? I mean, Dan Mullen had Alex Smith, but he wasn't even the coordinator there. He was the quarterback's coach. He had Leak and Tebow, but Tebow was Tebow. You know, I don't know, and this is no disrespect to Dan Mullen, but I don't know that I feel like Tebow wouldn't have been Tebow without Dan Mullen. Does that make sense? You with me on that?
Mm-hmm.
But Dak wouldn't have been Dak without Dan Mullen. Is that, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think to answer, it's Dak Prescott by a mile.
By a mile, right? Yeah. I think so too.
I mean, Anthony Richardson may supplant that in the next 7 years.
Yeah.
But for now, because he's obviously going to have to get into the, you know, he's going to have to be a star in college, then get into the league, then be a star in the NFL. So it's going to take some time. But Dak Prescott by a mile right now is who Dan Mullen brings. That's who he's going to bring up first when he's, you know, meeting a high school prospect.
Yeah, I think so too. So we got a lot of things to talk about today on the program. Glad you're with us live from Showtime Sports Cards and Collectibles. Always a Stanley Pool Thursday, by the way. We thank our friends from Stanley Pool, the best pool company around. Gosh, they do a good job, and they never even slough off, man. And no matter how long they've done it, my friend Greg Stanley and all the folks over there continue to do a terrific, terrific job. Also an Old Rock Thursday, kind of a fun Old Rock Thursday. You'll hear that coming up. Someone I don't think's ever been on Old Rock Thursday before.
Ooh.
Believe it or not. I thought
debut.
About
that. It's long-awaited, I'm going to guess.
It is long-awaited. There's a little bit of a theme to it. But,
I love themes.
I'll tell you the theme. I'm not a big theme guy necessarily.
That's where you and I differ.
But the Jags are heading to Texas. That's okay. What I'll tell you. The Jags are heading to Texas. That's your only hint, okay? The Jags are heading to Texas. So it's Old Rock Thursday.
It's all George Strait.
How do you know that? How did you know? Don't think George Strait didn't cross my mind, okay?
Hayes would be so happy.
Well, the ass whipping I would take from Carline wasn't worth it, you know? I didn't want to walk out here bloody. Hayes bloodies me up, and then I got to walk out the door. So
I've got a guess, but I would think they've probably made their Old Rock Thursday debut.
Okay,
but I'm going to go. You want me to wait?
No, I want you to wait and tell me. If you, tell me if your guess was right or not.
Okay.
So, but I don't. I think.
But
this
now
is,
he's just gonna say yes. That's who I thought. As soon as the artist plays.
No, he won't. He's got one in mind. So I trust him. So
I'll write it down.
I trust.
So that we're ending Brooks's conspiracy theory here.
When we come back, a lot to talk about. I want to start with a really, really cool way the Jaguars introduced their captains, and it's way bigger than just the captains. I'll explain it after this. It's 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Pretty woman, walking down the street. Pretty woman, the kind I like to meet. Pretty woman, I don't believe you, you're not the truth. No one could look as good as you.
I want to bring back
mercy.
ZZ Top was too easy. Is that your?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, ZZ Top.
I didn't know Roy Orbison is from Texas.
Yeah, ZZ. But how good is Roy Orbison? How's Roy Orbison never made it?
How has he never made it?
Roy Orbison's never been. The Wilburys have been on, and Thunder Road has been on, where he gets mentioned.
That's what I was just about to say. Isn't Roy Orbison one of Bruce Springsteen's favorites?
Loves Orbison. He was the biggest Orbison fan ever.
And I know lots of people love Orbison, but yeah, Thunder Road. I listened to Thunder Road last night and heard his name, and so I cannot believe that he's never been on before.
Roy Orbison's first ever appearance. On Old Rock Thursday.
And now his legacy is complete.
Now it is. That was the only thing missing, if you think about it. So Roy Orbison today. I
love it.
I love Roy Orbison. I don't know how I didn't think of him before. But anyway, he's on Old Rock Thursday. Roy Orbison.
Great choice.
What inspired him? Just the fact that he's from Texas?
You know, I didn't know he was from Texas either.
Okay.
So I just said, let me find somebody from Texas. And I looked around, and ZZ Top was obvious. And I did think about George Strait, but then I thought Hayes would punch me in the face. And I didn't want to be punched in the face. So I went through all of them. And then when I got to Roy Orbison, I said, well, I'll be damned. I had no idea where he's from. So I didn't know he was
what part of Texas?
Guy. Don't know. I just found the band from Texas, and I love Roy Orbison. And then I thought to myself, why has Roy Orbison never been on Old Rock Thursday? So there you go, Roy Orbison today.
Love it.
On Old Rock Thursday.
Vernon, Texas, by the way.
Vernon, Texas. Thank you.
Who knew?
Wherever that is.
Yeah, I'm with you. Hey,
I think Flair and Dusty Rhodes battled in Vernon, Texas.
I'm sure they did. Hey, we all by now have seen the video. The way the Jags announced their captains, there are seven captains. If you didn't see it, Urban announced that the offensive guys were Trevor Linder and Marvin Jones. The defensive guys were Josh Allen, Miles Jack, Shaq Griffin, and Rayshon Jenkins. And they did it in alphabetical order. But what they did is they had their families do a video. With Josh, it was his wife and kids. With Trevor, it was his wife, and they had their dog was there because they were here. Miles Jackett was his mom. Brandon Linder, a very dear friend of his who's battled cancer. That one, I teared up at that one.
Yeah, you could tell Linder did too.
Yeah, it was really good. Rayshon Jenkins, two little kids. It was really good. It was real. Shaq Griffin's brother, Shaquem. It was really good stuff. And number one, I thought it's the best thing I've seen. And they've done a lot of stuff. Pat Cavanaugh, who runs Jaguars.com, and they do such a great job, has told me numerous times the Urban regime has been so good to them, has allowed them to do so much stuff, to be behind the scenes. So they let them behind the scenes. You don't recruit in NFL other than free agency, but it would be the greatest recruiting video ever. I thought it was one of the honest to God, I thought it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. I've got more to say about it. But it was amazingly cool, I thought.
I agree. I mean, this is why Urban Meyer has won 85% of his games, that an incredible amount of talent. But it's why he's able to draw in that talent. It's why he's able to build programs, at least to the college level, that dominated the sport. And he's able to push people, grind people, but also has an amazing ability to get a group of people together and to show them how much he cares about them, how much he respects them, and the work ethic and job that they're doing. I thought it was fantastic. I've never seen an NFL coach do this. Now, that doesn't mean it hasn't happened before and it just didn't get put out on social media, but I've never seen it. And it seemed like there was a genuine, authentic reaction from the players of, wow, this is pretty awesome.
At first, when I heard there were going to be seven captains, I thought, that seems like too many, even though, yes, we know Urban's done that in the past, but that's always been college. And then the video completely changed it for me. The way that they were, I think, just bonding as a team watching that video, it was really special. And yes, of course, I had tears in my eyes. I probably had tears in my eyes with Josh Allen's family, but then by the time you get to the end with Brandon Linder's friend, yeah, that really got me. I thought it was so well done, but don't kid yourself. Urban is recruiting already. Yeah. He's recruiting next year's free agents by stuff like this.
But you know the cool thing about it, it's why I wanted to lead my show with it. And if you haven't seen it, it's all over Twitter. It's very easy to find. But I watched it. Marty Smith from ESPN weighs in. Rappaport weighs in. All the national guys weigh in. And that's all great. It's great that we have positive attention, and it's great that people are saying something nice about after all the stuff that's been said about our market in recent years. But you know what that said to me? And I don't care how many people think it's corny. I don't really care. You can think it's corny all you want. It's my show. I'm going to say what I think. But that's important, that whole family thing. He said from the day he got here, I care about my players. Now, I want them to have the best of the best. Now, we're going to push them, but I care about them. Well, it sounds like lip service. That was a way of him reaching out and touching his team. Not just the seven, but touching all of them. And by the way, there's probably plenty of family, team, culture things they've done that the public just hasn't seen. But we've got to see this one. And I thought that was the coolest way. Look, football's hard, man. You break your bones and you tear your ACL and you go in concussion protocol and you worry about your brain and it's freaking hard. I mean, 280-pound guys who run really fast slamming their bodies into each other. And so the ones who can capture that whole family culture and we're in this bunker together thing. They all say it, by the way. There's never been a coach yet that says, I don't care about culture. I don't care about it. We're not in this together. We're all out for ourselves. Well, nobody says that. But they don't all show that. I thought you said it, Hayes. There's a reason this guy wins all the time. Because the psychology of the human mind and really caring about his players and all that. I thought it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. It was real. It was visceral. There was no grandstanding. There wasn't some coach up there pounding his chest. There wasn't some player up there pounding his chest. There wasn't a look at me moment. We've had too many look at me moments. That was nothing. Nobody talked. The only people talked. Urban said, enjoy the video. These are our captains. Nobody else talked except the people on the video. And then he said, one more time, let's have a hand for our captains. I thought it was could not have been done any better than it was.
I totally agree, and it gets me excited for what else they're going to be able to show us throughout the season. If Urban's letting this Jaguars.com group into moments that haven't really been revealed before, what else are we going to see? I'm excited.
He's talked about legacy since he got here, and it's a big motivational tool for him, is for these players, what kind of legacy are we going to leave here? What kind of legacy is your family going to know that you left here? He mentioned it on the practice field when we were out there in training camp, and one of his many speeches to the team, at the early stage of practice. And he said, what do you want your family to think when they come back here, when you come back here? Don't you want to be able to come back here to this stadium and tell your family, look at what we built here? Because he was very clear, this has not been a winner. If you build a winner here, you will be building something that has not happened here in a very long time and has never really lasted for any great length of time. And that's the opportunity that this group has. And if they're able to do it with Trevor Lawrence and his Immortals, then this will be the year that changed Jaguars football forever. And Urban Meyer is very cognizant of that, and he has communicated that very well. And I think that is a profound motivational tool to use on players. When you bring in their family and say, they're going to know what you did here. What kind of legacy do you want your spouse, your children to know that you left here for the Jacksonville Jaguars?
The best play caller I've been around is probably Steve Spurrier. Okay, best play caller. The best recruiter for a long period of time I've ever been around was Bobby Bowden. Okay, the best play caller I've ever seen was Steve Spurrier. The best recruiter I've ever been around was Bobby Bowden. The best game day decision coach, when to call the timeout, how to manage, is Jimmy Johnson. So for me, if you ask me to break down their specific stuff, the best play caller for me is Spurrier. The best recruiter, Bowden could get anybody to go there. If Bowden got in your home, you were going to Florida. Just so you know, don't let him in your door if you don't want to go to FSU. Because when Bowden came in your door, you were going to FSU. Right? Best recruiter ever. Jimmy Johnson managed the moment better. Special teams plays. Managing that moment, the best I've ever seen. The best I've ever seen at getting every drop out of their players, Urban Meyer. Every time you see one of Urban's teams play, they can't wait to run through the wall for the guy. They absolutely can't wait. Do you remember when we were doing a show at Dome? We were doing a show at Dome Hats. Sometime right after Urban got the job. Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm.
Right after Urban had gotten the job, we're doing a show at Dome. And Chris Hetland played for him for a year. Jeff Whitaker was there, about to graduate, but he was there for his first
team meeting.
And do you remember the look on both those guys' faces when they talked about that first meeting and how they wanted – do you remember this?
Yes.
And they both said, man, when the guy was done, it was just a team meeting in January or whenever it was. It was a team meeting – 9 months before we had a game, and everybody walked out of that room wanted to run through the wall for the guy. He said it was almost surreal, the moment. Well,
Jeff was like, man, I wish I had more eligibility.
He did say that. That's exactly. He said, I wish I could still play some more. Well, I think you saw that in this video. That, and don't think for a minute that connection matters. Obviously, it matters to me. I've spent a whole segment on it. But don't think for a minute that connection doesn't matter when you're building a team. That's how you get every drop out of your guy. That's how. You know, coach's job is to get all the good players. Bobby Bowden's a great recruiter. Call good plays. Steve Spurrier's best I ever saw. In-game management. Jimmy Johnson's the best I ever saw. And by the way, all those guys are good at all of that. But I'm trying to break it down by component. in terms of getting your guys to play at their absolute, unequivocal, undeniable peak level, Urban's the best I've ever seen, ever, that I've watched it.
And I think the question is, does that work in the NFL? Does it apply to the NFL? Do those guys still have the same motivation that college players do for a coach? And I'd like to think the answer is yes, and I'd like to think that the culture is to that point. But I guess we'll find out a lot when it comes to Sunday at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They're gonna go through adversity this year. When the schedule first came out, I saw it as a 9-8 team, and that was with a 4-game losing streak. That's best case scenario. Now, I think the odds are very small they're gonna have a winning season. But so, you know, if they win 6-7 games, you're gonna go through stretches of it's not going well, and you know it's a 17-game gauntlet now. And you need everybody to stick together, or you just have no chance to succeed, particularly if you're not one of these teams that's going to, you know, roll the ball out and win 12 games. Like, there are, you know, five or six of those. So it is incredibly important. If it fails here, it won't be because he didn't try to build a culture. I mean, he has spent eons of energy doing that. And you hope with the talent they've acquired, starting with Trevor Lawrence, that you know, this will be the year of growing pains, and then starting next year, they will be a legit contender for the tournament.
How many times you watched that video?
I've probably seen it like 8 times.
Did you watch it multiple times?
Nah, it was great. I watched it once.
I watched it about, yeah. And I'm not a multiple guy.
I'm not either. I loved it.
I watched it about 3 or 4 times. I thought it was really cool.
Well, and it, I mean, especially
I don't watch it. Every time somebody else would tweet it,
sure,
I'd watch
yeah.
it again.
Yeah, it just kind of, once it pops up on your Twitter timeline on your computer, it's like, oh, yeah. I'm going to watch it again. I just love it. A quick play caller question. Both Daryl Bevel and Trevor Lawrence have kind of said, like, running the ball is not what he's going to do. And Trevor said, you know, I'm not lobbying for runs. Bevel said today about the first 15 plays or so are scripted. Is there any chance in one of those 15 plays it's a designed Trevor run because they've been saying that's not what they're going to do and they want to make the Texans defense have to prepare for that?
There's absolutely a chance. I don't think when you have Trevor Lawrence, you call running plays for your quarterback very often. Number one, it's not an NFL thing.
Right.
And it's true. You got to protect him. You got to keep him out of harm's way. But I'm also a believer that in my years of doing this, quarterbacks get hurt way more in the pocket than when they do as runners. Because when they run the ball, that still doesn't mean be stupid. Don't run your quarterback.
Don't be reckless.
Right. But I've seen in my opinion, I've seen a ton of times quarterback gets hurt in that pocket, hit from behind, drilled, Joe Theismann 1,000 times. I can't think of a lot of times quarterbacks have gotten hurt running the ball because they know how and when to protect themselves. Now, having said that, Trevor threw his body at the defense last week in Dallas trying to get the first down. But I think I would not run him. I would not have many designed runs to Lawrence's question, Hayes. But I think quarterbacks get hurt way more in the pocket than when they're in the open field getting ready to protect themselves.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. I wouldn't have very many, but I would have one early on in the script.
Me
because
too.
They like to hold that end as much as possible. And to do that, you need to have Trevor
keep it
take
one
off.
Time. I totally agree.
So I don't know that I would do it a lot, but I'd show it in the first, you know, 4 or 5 runs just to let Houston know that we're willing to do this, and he is a threat. If you're not going to cover it, he can easily get 8 or 9 yards and get out of bounds, if not more.
But that's a great point, Hayes. It's not a read play if they never believe you're keeping it. If they never believe you're keeping it, then they're just going to tackle the running back every time. But if one time, because he's a really good runner. If he keeps that thing one time and runs 17 yards, well, the rest of the game and the tape you show the next team and the next team. He just ran for 17 yards. Now you got to play it. Now you got to be respect it. So I think it's a very good point. But no, they're not going to run it very much.
No, but that was why I asked the question.
Yeah,
If they're going to do it, wouldn't you do it early?
I would. Yeah. I agree with both of you guys. That's exactly what I would do. Let's take a break. When we come back, let's talk a little college football. Greg McGarrity stops by. He's the executive director of the Gator Bowl. The Gator Bowl College Football Report is next. We'll talk a little bit about what Greg saw the first week. Is it too early to ask him the teams? Probably not, right?
No.
I think I'm going to ask him.
I've got bold projections. Okay. I'm ready to throw at him.
We're live at Showtime on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. Every time I look into your Roy Orbison today on Old Rock Thursday. He's a Texan, and the Jags are going to go play the Texans, so that's why we did that. Glad you're with us on the program, live from Showtime Sports Cars and Collectibles here on Phillips Highway, just near Shad Road. Frank Frangie, Lauren Brooks, Hayes Carline, and our buddy Greg McGarrity is here now, the executive director of the Gator Bowl. How you doing over there, buddy? You're checking this place out, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm fascinated. It's just amazing what's in this building.
Yeah, he did a great job. JD and Richard did a great job with this thing. I mean, everything. This stuff is fantastic. Mm-hmm. You're a collector as a kid, you're telling us, right?
I was. When my parents passed away, I think we were all trying to find where the baseball cards were.
Right.
I remember.
Did you find them?
Chewing the gum? No. So I'm not sure where they are. Maybe Stu took them, brother. Yeah, but yeah. No, we used to collect them, and the stick of gum was a huge part
Absolutely
of that.
Absolutely.
Probably paid more of the gum than he was on the cards.
All my buddies. Hayes is a big collector. Mm-hmm. Blue still has his. I think Blue still has his baseball. Doesn't Blue still have his baseball cards? When Blue and I did the show together, he had them like in a safe deposit box or something. So
you better guard them with your life. They're worth a lot.
I guess so. So all right, 1 week in. What did you think of the first week of the college football season? What got your attention?
Crowds.
Yeah.
I was a little nervous about the crowds and how they would turn out, but man, every game you saw on TV, Virginia Tech. You saw great crowds in the SEC, ACC great crowds. So I was really impressed with the crowds that we saw. And some, you know, the first week never defines a season, but there were certainly some great games on display. And it seemed like everybody in America was watching almost all those games.
Yeah, well, you're right about the crowd. I'm glad you said it, Virginia Tech. We all talked about it. That kind of kicked off the weekend. We were up at Island Wings, so we all stuck around, had a couple of drinks, and watched that game start. It was awesome. They're jumping around, and I know people are worried, and I get it, but I thought it was awesome.
It was. It was fantastic. Georgia's defense, pretty fantastic as well. What'd you make of the Dogs?
Yeah, I was just it's probably the best defensive game I've ever seen them play in totality against a good team. And, of course, we'll find out how good everybody is in
right.
week 2 and on down the road. But for the magnitude of that game and all the lead-in to it to be a defensive struggle was kind of reminded you of the way football used to be. Mm-hmm. And very conservative on offenses both sides and not many deep balls. But I thought Georgia's line of scrimmage and the linebacking and the pressure was just outstanding.
Are you still nervous when you watch them?
I am. But at least once the game's over with, I can just relax a little bit. I don't have to worry about, you know, consoling a coach or congratulating right. a coach or deal with the fallout of a loss and things like that. Yeah. So. I watched the whole game on TV, and that's kind of how I've been consuming football even last year on the road.
Are you excited to see Carson Beck this coming week?
You know, I've been reading reports. Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah.
I do know that watching UAB play, and I understand they played Jacksonville State on that Wednesday night, but the job that they've done at UAB is an amazing story. They've got a lot of veterans back, so there's – you can't take anybody for granted. We saw that last week in a lot of FCS schools. I mean, Montana beats Washington in Seattle.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got some games there that were really surprising. So a few errors here and there, and you take somebody for granted, you know, you're going to have some issues.
You know, I'll tell you this about UAB. UAB is roundly considered the UCF of the future. They've got the stadium now. Looks just like their stadium, UCF. Bill Clark's a really good coach. The people expect there'll be the next one. If somebody arises like Boise and UCF did. Now they can't beat Georgia this year. Georgia's got too much this year. But you're right. If they were going into Mississippi State or North Carolina, that'd be a hairy – that UAB would be a hairy game, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I just remember Kirby's first game as a head coach against Nicholls State.
Okay.
That game was still in play in the fourth quarter. And you don't think I had the dry mouth on the sidelines of that game. Georgia eventually won, but I'd say, please, Lord, don't let Kirby's career start out with a loss to Nicholls State.
I just hired this guy, okay?
Yeah.
This is my big hire.
Yeah.
Oh. I remember that.
Not a good day, but, you know, I think a lot of lessons learned that
That's
first game.
Greg, we saw Alabama just do it again, just absolutely destroy another – good opponent. You've got a unique perspective because you've seen unbelievable teams at Florida, unbelievable teams at Georgia. But from your perspective, what has Nick Saban been able to do at Alabama? Why are they so consistently elite?
Well, I just think he's done a phenomenal job in their culture. I mean, they expect to win. And, you know, all those things come into play, and you have a coach that's so dedicated to winning. And recruiting at a very high level, and you get, you know, I tell you what, the bench is the greatest deterrent for a lot of people maybe not giving maximum effort. I know he's been kind of edgy this week, but you know, there's a he has a method to the madness there. But I just think they play at a very high level. You know, Georgia's been on the doorstep there, and it's just a game of inches. I mean, you can go down the list, and even last year I think Georgia led Alabama at the half in Tuscaloosa, and then, you know, Alabama just kind of willed their way. But they have a way of just I don't think you can ever put them away. Very rarely could you, but I just think they've got a mentality, they've got a culture there to where they expect to win, and they just execute at a high level.
That's a big part of it, man. If you, we used to say that about the FSU-Miami game and all those wide rights. They FSU had these great teams, man. But Miami came in expecting to beat FSU, and FSU came into those games hoping they could beat Miami. I'm not sure Miami had the better roster of the year, although Miami teams were great, but I think that was a big part of it.
Fans and media, we kind of throw around the term hot seat casually, right? Yet here you have a coach in Ed Orgeron who wins a national championship in 2019, and then throughout the offseason, and then obviously with the loss to UCLA already, people are using the term hot seat in connection with him. As a former AD, though, how difficult is that to navigate, and do you even have those conversations behind closed doors?
You know, you never want to put pressure on a coach to have certain records or whatever, because certain things may happen. Injuries at the wrong time, you're playing a hot team, little things may happen during the year that affect the ability for a team to perform. But I think there's a lot of things. What goes on really unknown to everyone is what goes on under the surface. Team chemistry, how are the coaches communicating with each other. I've seen it work both ways to where, you know, a culture may not be the way it should be that gives you pause for concern. And so as an AD, you have to look at everything. I mean, even things like class attendance, disciplinary matters, how are kids responding, you know, be at practice, see how they're responding. You know, are they having a good time? Because if you see a team having a good time and you have a losing record, you got big problems there. But I just think there's so many things to evaluate, and winning and losing is probably the ultimate decider, but there's a lot of things that go into play, and sometimes patience is in short demand in today's world. I mean, immediate success is problematic, but you're seeing the problem when you reach a certain level. It's very difficult to maintain that level and even increase it. Alabama's been able to do that. Ohio State's been it. Very few have been able to do it over a period of time.
That's a really interesting take. Greg McGarrity's with us, executive director of the Gator Bowl, longtime AD at Georgia. That's a great point. That's really interesting. That's a really good point. So as an AD, you go to practice and you watch and see how they respond to their coaching, and you look at their grade reports. That's really interesting. Is that an AD thing? Is that just a Greg thing? Or
No.
That's really interesting because I wouldn't have known that.
Well, I think it's the normal operating procedure because I've always felt like if you're dependent on someone to execute on fourth and one, and they aren't going into class and doing the little things, how can you depend them? And there's a huge correlation there.
Yeah.
Because a certain shortcomings on the field, they always tie into problems on the backside.
Yeah.
Very rarely do you have those tied into someone that's really doing the right things, going to class, doing the things they're supposed to do with performance. And sometimes, you know, you would shake your head and say, well, that's not surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, he can't even do this or that at an elementary level. I don't mean academics. I'm just talking about doing the right thing and hustling and things. So there is a correlation there I've always felt like. Fewer problems on the front end, fewer problems on the back end.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was going to ask you this for the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl this season. Does it restart in terms of if they've recently played here, they can't be selected again? Does that restart, or are there still teams that since they were just here, that probably won't have them back?
Well, I know in the SEC format, repeat appearances are frowned upon. And I saw one projection had NC State in Kentucky, and I'm sitting there saying, you know, how could that happen? How could somebody make that prediction?
Right.
You know, that's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, that's not going to happen. But I do think that goes in the mix with the ACC and the SEC. I mean, they want these young people to have different experiences in different cities. They want the bowls to experience different teams because you kind of get bogged down. I think Gator Bowl had maybe Mississippi State for 2 years in a row. That's probably not the best scenario. So.
Yeah.
That's when some new protocols were put in place to where repeat performances, even over a two-year span, were frowned upon. And sometimes it may be unavoidable, but I can almost assure everyone NC State and Kentucky will not be playing in the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl this year.
Nothing drove Catlett crazy more than he'd see Brett McMurphy or Dennis Dobbins projections, who never called him. He said they don't call me. I don't know who else they talk to, but I know they're not talking to me. Yeah. It would drive him nuts.
Yeah, it's just spitballing up there. Yeah. You know, be like us getting together. Who do we want in this bowl? And
Callan told me one time, was it last year or the year before, was it Brett? Was it McMurphy? Was somebody? He called him.
Finally started.
He said, Brett, I'm here. Right. Okay, here's my number. Okay, it's on your caller ID if you need me to clear that up for
then
you.
Then they probably say, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that's right.
Was it Schlabaugh?
Maybe
that
Schlabaugh.
I think that's who it was.
It was somebody. Schlabaugh. I think it was Schlabaugh. But he's Mark, here's my number. I got this for you. So, all right, what did you make of the Gators? What did you make of FSU Notre Dame? Give me your takes on some of the other
teams. I didn't see a snap against Florida because they were going head on with Georgia.
Okay, so you didn't see any of that. All right,
but FSU was absolutely a phenomenal game. I mean, a packed house. Yes. I don't know when the last full house was there. They were honoring all the intangibles were there. Yeah. They're honoring Bobby Bowden. Mackenzie Milton coming in and rallying them against really a team that really doesn't panic. Notre Dame never panics. And I give a lot of credit to their coach. They just kind of stabilize. You know, they don't get too high, too low, and it's very difficult to put them away.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the tables were turned there when FSU was down 38-20.
Yeah.
It could have been the woe is me attitude and won our day. But, boy, FSU turned the corner. In that game, I think they showed that while nobody's into moral victories at this level, a lot more positives than negatives in that game.
Overall, the ACC didn't do as well. Does that disappoint you a little bit?
Sure. I mean, we need the ACC to really be strong because it's they're half of our bowl scenario there. So we need a strong performance. I thought Virginia Tech was probably the most surprising team all week. If they play like that all year, they're going to be okay.
Right, that's right.
You know, and you got Clemson and them. North Carolina, I'm sure, will be back. They just didn't play well. You know, there are some concerns there, but, you know, again, it's just week one, a lot of ball to be played, and so I think they'll turn it around.
Where are you sending guys this week? Do you know what games you're going to? What you're scouting?
Well, we have scouts at Georgia.
Okay.
We have scouts at Clemson.
Okay.
And we have scouts at Florida State again. It's a little too early. They're really not getting that involved. I think a lot of this is just early games. So we're really starting to pick up the pace week 8, 9, 10 and forward there.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you this because I care. I don't like your chances of getting Clemson or Georgia. Okay, I'm really smart that way, Greg. I understand. Will you go to games? Will you go to any games?
I think maybe towards the end of the year.
Okay.
Championship games, you know, either the SEC or ACC beforehand. But time will tell. But we've got a lot of people out and about, and the relationships that we have with my fellow ADs is strong. So I think people know where we are and what we're all about.
One good thing I was just going to say real quick about Florida State is at least it looks like, I know they lost, but it looks like they could get certainly into the 6-win territory, but maybe 7-8 wins. So maybe going into the season, we didn't really know what the Noles would have in terms of, I'd be shocked if they're not bowl eligible with it at least 6, if not 7 or 8.
Key thing, you got to win the games you're supposed to win. That is the key thing. And sometimes that drags a team down where they're supposed to win or heavy favorite and whatever they have a letdown. I mean, you've got to be ready every week. And if they do that, I think they're going to be okay.
You're right, because who you're supposed to beat changes now.
Absolutely.
You know, the Florida State didn't have a lot of teams on that who you're supposed to beat list.
That's right.
Now I think Wake Forest is now on that list. I think Boston College and Louisville on that. They weren't on that list a week ago.
Absolutely.
So it'll change.
No, they turned a lot of heads, and I thought it was very promising. Should excite all the Seminole fans.
Greg McGarrity, Executive Director of the Gatorwell. Hey, thanks for stopping by. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
1 hour to go. We're live here at Showtime on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Roy Orbison on Old Rock Thursday here live at Showtime Sports Cards and Collectibles. They've got Trevor Lawrence signed helmets, Trevor Lawrence signed footballs, Trevor Lawrence signed jersey, or if your favorite player is DJ Chark, Miles Jack, they've got it. Come on by here and get it. And then, of course, if you want anything autographed by Josh Scobie, come on by between 5 and 7. We are located on Phillips Highway, just at the intersection of Shad Road. I'm excited about football tonight. I know everybody is excited about football tonight. But, Frank, everybody thinks the Bucs are going to destroy the Cowboys. Is that an indication of how people feel about one Dak Prescott?
Yeah, I think it's more it's representative of how people feel about the Bucs. The Bucs are really good. The Cowboys haven't had a good football haven't had an elite football team in more years than anybody can remember. In fact, it's almost surprising that it's been this many years since the Cowboys have been elite. Now, they were 13-3 5 years ago. It seems like longer than that, doesn't it? But it's been a long time since it's been an elite team. But it brings me to Dak Prescott a little bit here. Hayes, what is he? How's he? Is he a, you know, 2 years ago he threw 30 touchdowns, but he threw the 11 picks. Good, not great. Reached his potential yet? We talk about quarterbacks all the time, and he doesn't make the conversation very often. How good is he?
He's very good. I don't think he's elite, but I think he's – I give him a lot of credit.
Top what?
Eight.
Okay.
Top quadrant, you know, I would say. You know, and again, you're talking about a guy who's just now getting into the what should be the peak of his career. You know, I don't know how great he'll be tonight because you're coming back from the injury. You don't have one of your best offensive linemen. You're going up against a tremendous defense. So I think tonight's a rough go, but I think Dak Prescott will have a great career in Dallas. I think they were smart to go ahead and sign him long-term. And, yeah, I don't think we're ever going to look up and say Dak Prescott is elite, you know, one of the top four quarterbacks in the league. But I think he will be considered a quality starter for many more years.
Yeah, I think the key is going to be this season. Obviously, coming off of the injury and getting paid and everything like that, Ezekiel Elliott is a little bit slimmer, should be a little bit faster and ready to rock and roll. So what can their offense do? Not just tonight, yes. That's going to be a tough go of it. But this season, I think it's a really important season for McCarthy, for Prescott. Not necessarily for Jerry Jones because he'll be there forever. But this team needs to win the division. I mean, to me, if you're a Cowboys fan and you don't win the division, you're ready for heads to roll.
It felt like to me his rookie year he was headed to greatness. He was the rookie of the year in 16. He was in a Pro Bowl in 16. It looked like to me that was, oh my goodness, they won 13 games. I thought they had the next great thing in Dak Prescott. And that's when I really started thinking, wow, this guy Dan Mullen really is something special. Between injuries, Cowboys being Cowboys, he seemed to be underwhelming to me since then. Now the Jags went on their play there; he was lights out. But I find myself, you said it this season, and he's making all the money in the world because it's hard to find quarterbacks. I think he's apparently a great guy. He shows up when Mississippi State's in the women's basketball. He shows up when they're in the baseball. He shows up. You know, and he's a real good Mississippi State guy, and you know you can count on when they're in the College World Series, Dak's going to be there. He's that guy. So apparently, well liked by everybody. I guess top eight. Yeah, that's probably right. I guess top eight now that Peyton and Eli and Rivers and all that gang has moved on, and they haven't been replaced. Yeah, I guess that's probably right. Top eight, top ten guys. I just don't know that. That he, like you said, he's ever going to be a great player. He's a really good player. I don't know if he's going to be a great player. Everybody's got the Cowboys getting pounded tonight. You too?
Yes.
Pounded. What's the number?
I think it's going to be, but then for an NFL game, a complete ride.
What's the line's at 8.5 now? Nine. Okay.
I would give it a nine.
You think Bucks cover easy?
I do.
Yeah. So as for the Bucks, what are the stumbling blocks for them, Hayes, as we get set for this hopefully repeat season? Nobody repeats, but – somebody might eventually. What are the stumbling blocks for them?
I think just attrition, which is obviously going to be a concern for any team in the league. But, I mean, short of that, the Bucs can defend. They've got a quarterback that is the nemesis of complacency. I mean, he's never been satisfied. He's still maniacal about everything that he does, which translates to his teammates. They protect him. He went to a place wisely that had weapons that they have retained. They can run the ball when they need to run the ball. I think that, you know, Tampa Bay doesn't really have a glaring weakness. So unless they start getting hit with a lot of injuries, I think the division now went from being one of the more difficult ones in the league to now one of the easiest, because I think the Saints are mediocre now. The Falcons went from being in the Super Bowl a few years ago to, I think, they're subpar and they're not ready to contend. The Panthers clearly aren't ready to contend. So, you know, that's the first thing. They have, I think, a very easy path to a division title, which gives them a home playoff game. So now you've got to go and beat Tampa in Tampa. And last year they did it all on the road. until the Super Bowl. So I don't see a lot of stumbling blocks. If they stay healthy, I think they will represent the NFC and have a chance to defend their crown.
Yeah, I picked it Bucks Chiefs because I don't see any flaws, like you said, in the Bucks. I mean, we've never had a Super Bowl champion return all of their starters. And then, of course, they've added to it as well. The one thing that we've talked about every year, and it never has happened yet, that's Father Time catching up with Tom Brady. Is there a chance that at some point in this season, Tom Brady takes a hit and all of a sudden he's no longer the same quarterback? That's the only thing I can see happening that eliminates them from being in Super Bowl.
And there's always a chance, but you're right. And obviously, health of your quarterback is element number one always. But I don't know.
But even if he's not injured, does he just all of a sudden start to look like he's 44?
I hear you. Do you remember the playoff game against the Peyton Broncos? The AFC championship game, right? Was it a championship game or was it the week before? It was a championship game, right?
You're talking about the one where they harassed Brady all over the field.
Yeah, where Peyton won the Super Bowl in Denver. Okay, that was the championship game, right? He made the AFC title. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
They made the AFC championship game. The AFC title. They didn't. But that game, when Von Miller and those guys went crazy, he looked old. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking, I'm the one who always thought Brady would play forever. And he just looked old that day.
There was a game last season, I forget who the opponent was, and they harassed Brady a lot, and the Bucks lost big. I don't think it was the Packers. There was one game last season, the Bucks lost big, and that's when we all thought, okay, never mind. They're not going to make it far in the postseason.
I think there's no reason not to pick them other than everyone's picking them, so I'm not going to pick them. And so I think I'm going to go, but I am going to pick the Chiefs to go back. Because I don't, with all due respect to the Bills, I don't think the Chiefs have anybody close to them in the AFC for me. I can't find anybody. I thought about the Titans, and then I get run out of town, so I'm not going to do that. I think I'm going Seahawks-Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Who'd you go?
I went Chiefs-Bucks, and I'm going to have the Chiefs win. It was, by the way, real quick, it was Bucks lost 38-3 to New Orleans last year.
The Saints, The Saints handle them in the regular season.
Yeah.
Who do you like in the Super Bowl? Who do you like? Top you.
I think the Bucks repeat, and I think the Bucks take down Buffalo.
Okay, so Bucks and Bills. I'll go Seahawks, Chiefs, and I think the Chiefs will win. You're going Bucks and Chiefs, and who do you think is going to win?
Chiefs.
Gibby, who do you like in the Super Bowl?
I like the Bills over the Bucks for me. I think the Bills win it.
So you and Hayes like the same Super Bowl game, just different teams.
Yes.
I'll go Chiefs beating the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. Part of it is I just want to watch Russell Wilson versus Patrick Mahomes. I just want to watch it. So part of that's mine. So, and Lauren has got Chiefs beating Bucks.
Chiefs beating the Bucks. So, now, in the break, you told someone it was going to be Jags Falcons.
Torn between those two games. I may reverse it back to Jags Falcons. So we'll have to see. We'll take a break. Let's get into a little bit of college football after this. Lots of stuff to talk about in the college game. Stay with us.
Just had Domino last segment. Now only the lonely. Good stuff. All right, Florida takes on South Florida this Saturday, kicking off at 1:00. And Gibby's got the latest when it comes to injuries.
Now the Gator Injury Report.
Now we've got another injury.
Brought to you by Southeast Orthopedic Specialists on 1010XL.
All right, the Gators, as they head into Saturday afternoon's contest against USF. The Gators did come out of their season opening game without any new injuries, so that's a good point to make as well. The Gators are hoping that redshirt freshman defensive tackle Lamar Goods will be making his UF debut on Saturday. Sophomore defensive tackle Jalen Lee is going to be questionable. Redshirt freshman defensive back Kamar Wilcoxon, thank you, Lauren, will be out for the season, unfortunately. He has undergone knee surgery Monday.
Yeah, you jinxed him, all of you.
Yeah, unfortunately.
All of you.
That's your report.
You wanted to hear it every week.
That was a very good
one. I expect to hear that 10 more times.
No, he's out for the season.
Well, that's got to be mentioned every injury report.
That was a very good moment. Gibby, well done. So, what Gibby did not have in his report is, does Emory Jones have an injured psyche? And how much will that factor into this game? Lauren, you said something before we started the show that was so true and so dead on. Suddenly the USF game has huge impact.
So intriguing. Normally we'd go into this game and go, Florida's got pretty much a cupcake. They're not any good. Well, all Gator fans will be locked in to, is 15? When is 15 coming in? Yeah. When is 15? Is it 5? Is it 15? Is it 5? Is it 15? And I think that's going to have their intrigue more than any other position on the field, even though there are some other intriguing things for this football team. Everyone's going to be focused, laser focused on the quarterback position.
And I think the thing that's going to be really interesting if you're a Gators fan is how do you want to see it play out? You always want the team to play well no matter who's in. But I'd be lying if I said there isn't a part of me that kind of hopes Anthony Richardson runs for 160 and hits, you know, 8 of 12 through the air. And not that Emory struggles.
I get it.
But that Anthony Richardson looks like a phenom again, because that's where I want this program to go.
That's very honest, by the way. Because, by the way, that's where Gator fan is. Whether you feel guilty about kind of being there, that's where Gator fan is. And I get it. I get it. What you just said is you don't wish anything bad on Emory, but if Emory's just okay and Anthony Richardson's really good again, you hope he plays against Alabama. I'm not there, but I get it. I'm not there because I haven't allowed myself to go. You know what I mean, Hayes? I haven't allowed myself to go there, but I get it because because you may have something spectacular. That's your point, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, so you know how it's going to go. Emory Jones is going to look phenomenal. Anthony Richardson's not. And then we're going to go into the game against Alabama going, now what's going to happen?
Yeah, see,
Anthony Richardson and Emory Jones will both look fantastic, let's be honest, because the team's not very good they're facing.
Yeah, but neither was last week, and Emory Jones didn't look fantastic. So that he did not look fantastic last week.
But I think FAU is much better than South Florida.
Yeah, probably. But as I go back, and think about this, there's this narrative out there. And it's not just Hayes. Dan Hicken said the same thing. I talked to two or three people, a buddy of mine in the neighborhood said the same thing. It's hard to vision Florida beating Alabama with Emory Jones. That's not a Hayes Carline thing or a Dan Hicken thing or a Joe Blow. That, whether you like it or not, that feeling is permeated throughout Gator Nation. It's hard to imagine them winning. My fear is I can't imagine them beating Alabama with a guy that's thrown 3 college passes. I mean, just completed 3 college passes, which is Anthony Richardson. So we're collectively saying there's no chance they can win the game. Well, there's always a chance you can win the game.
Emory can't have completed that many more passes, though, because a lot of times he was used for run plays.
Yeah, but I mean, I'll bet you Emory, he completed 17 the other night. I'll bet Emory's got to have 40 career completions, right? 40, 50 career completions. Anthony Richardson has 3.
He's going to get a lot more, you'd think, on Saturday.
Yeah, so but again, I'm not rooting for either one. But Hayes made a very honest point. You said it exactly right. You don't feel like it's right to feel that way, but what you're saying is what every Gator fan feels, just what you did. Hey, you know, Emory's waited his turn. I want him to get a chance. I want things to go well for him. It wouldn't break my heart, though, if Anthony Richardson's great again and plays against Alabama. That's any Gator fan that says there's not a little bit of that in there is probably lying. There's got to be a little bit in there. So, for me, I hope Emory Jones plays great, and I think their best chance to beat Alabama is with a guy that's played a little bit. But I think Anthony Richardson might be great. I now don't find myself thinking Emory Jones would be great. I'm still not sure he won't be pretty good. I think he's a way better player than he played last week. I think I saw enough last year when he was playing relaxed that he's better than the guy we saw last week. And so, I mean, even if Anthony Richardson wins the job, you want Emory to be a good backup, you know? So, I mean, because there's nobody else. That, by the way, that's it. If it's not those two guys, there's nobody else that's played at all.
Right, but you run into the question of, if Emory doesn't start against Alabama and doesn't start the next week, is he going to look at the transfer portal?
Yeah, he's maybe. He's proven he's a very loyal guy, but everything's got a limit. Everything's got its edge. If I had to wait for this and wait for this and wait for them and now I'm waiting again, yeah, I'm probably leaving. And I don't know him. But, I mean, it's just such an intriguing game now. What's the best scenario? What if Emory Jones comes out, lights it up? They're up 31-0 at the half, and he is 17 of 21 for 312 and 3 touchdowns, and he's run for another 40 yards. And that's it. Anthony Richardson gets the whole second half, kind of your model, Lauren, where one gets out. Then you're excited. You're excited for him. But then that time you wait until Anthony Richardson is going to be the quarterback just got elongated. That's kind of the point.
Yeah, I will say this. I don't think Anthony Richardson's going to have to wait until the second half to play. So, but to your point, if Emory Jones is really sharp, then, yeah, I think you feel great about it. I think you feel like we've got two quarterbacks. If you're Dan Mullen, you're looking at saying we've got two quarterbacks that can potentially give Alabama some trouble. I just – the way – being in that stadium on Saturday night, Emory Jones against air wouldn't have looked good. He was missing guys low, behind. So, you know, hopefully he turns it around. But to then a week later have this – unbelievable performance, even against a team that's inferior to FAU in South Florida. I would be shocked if we see that. But if we see it, then, yeah, I think Dan Mullen would view it as we've got two really good options. To me, they have – it's a small chance anyway. They have no chance of beating Alabama if Emory Jones plays 80% of those snaps. I think the only chance Florida has – is if Anthony Richardson basically is Superman. And if that's what he is, then you've got to unleash that. That's your only chance to take down a team like Al. Even then, it could be a game like last year where even with Anthony Richardson might be brilliant, Florida might score 38 points. Alabama might score 45.
If it was nerves, like you suggested yesterday, Frank, for Emory Jones.
And I'm hoping.
Right. If that's the case, you played at home. Yes, there was a lot of people there. There were a ton of fans. But you were at home opening against an inferior team. What makes you think, even if he's more comfortable this week on the road, but what makes you think when Alabama's there and it's another 90,000 strong that he's not going to be nervous going up against the Tide?
Well, I hope if I'm guessing and hoping it was opening game jitters, we only have one opening game. I mean, this Alabama's not an opening game. Sure, you can be a little bit nervous. Trevor Lawrence talked about that the other day. My hope is, and I may be wrong, he might not be very good, but I'll say it again. The Emory Jones I saw in pieces last year was better than the guy I saw Saturday night. He was better. Now, he was in there only in pieces, and there wasn't pressure on him. He knew he was coming out after one series, or maybe sometimes two or three plays. But I don't know that I do think he'll be looser against Alabama. I don't know that I do. I'm hopeful. But and by the way, the home game, as far as the tension and stress of it all goes, well, the home game made it harder. The home game makes it harder. I mean, if you're nervous and you're finally getting the start and you got 90,000 people expecting you to do great things, I think that makes it even harder. So we'll see. Let's change gears a little bit. The Noles play against Jacksonville State. They'll win that game. The student tickets sold out. If they sell a lot of tickets to this game and win big, that's step two on that reclamation, is it not? I mean, I think it's significant that people are excited about buying tickets to Florida State games now.
Absolutely. That's a big thing with momentum is you don't want to look up on Saturday when it's not a marquee opponent and see, you know, 55,000 in the stadium. So it does feel like there is definitely a new energy. Florida State is you know, desperate to be great again. You can feel it in their fan base. They're just looking for that first spark. They believe that spark was provided Sunday night in an overtime loss to Notre Dame. And now it'll be interesting to see how they respond. I mean, I would think they'll easily win the game. But I am curious to see the amount of support that they'll have in the stands for Saturday, because that's tough. I mean, that's tough for any, you know, in this day and age. I mean, you know, if you're playing a team of that division, it's hard to get, you know, 80,000 into a stands unless you're just Alabama or one of these just absolute power teams.
The hope, Lauren, is that they're going because they're excited about FSU football again, because I agree with you, it is hard. But the hope is that they're going because they're excited about FSU football again. You know, it's been a long – I know a lot of FSU fans. I got a lot of buddies that went to school there or even didn't go to school there, just are Noles fans. And they were more excited this week than I have seen that group. That's just my friends I'm talking about. They were more excited than I've seen my group of FSU friends in, gosh, the second Jameis year, the beginning of the second Jameis year. For me.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Look, I mean, before FSU fans were going to a stadium where they knew that from the stands, they could tell that their players were going to do something wrong, usually pre-snap, whether that was 12 men on the field, whether that was offsides, false start, no matter what, they knew that their team was going to constantly frustrate them, constant miscommunications on defense. I mean, it was a team that looked like they had no coach. And it's hard to pay money and spend your time to go watch a team that's making you want to pull your hair out. now they have a team that, whether it's Jordan Travis or Mackenzie Milton, they've got weapons again. They've got a defense that's getting after guys. That is everything that they wanted to see. Whether or not they win 8 games this season, what they wanted to see is a team that looks well-coached and is in games. And again, last year against Jacksonville State, I don't know if y'all remember the game. I don't know if you were traveling. It was back and forth for the first 3 quarters. Yeah, FSU eventually pulled away 41-24, but there was a time I was watching that game going, oh my gosh, FSU might lose to Jacksonville State.
Which is the game they won because they missed an extra point. Is that Louisiana Monroe or
Georgia Tech?
No, no.
Right?
No.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Because Louisiana Monroe almost beat them. Louisiana Monroe missed an extra point.
Was that last year or a Taggart year?
Was that 2 years ago?
It might have been maybe Taggart.
Because the first year last year they lost to Georgia Tech.
Okay, then maybe they're running together. Who's the quarterback? Mackenzie Milton? Or would you start Travis?
If they're both healthy. I'd start Travis. I mean, I like what he gives the offense. I'd still want to ease Mackenzie Milton back a little bit. I'd play them both. I mean, that would be in the plan.
Right.
But I think Jordan Travis had some really great moments against Notre Dame. I mean, again, the comeback is sparked because he gets out of a sack somehow and rolls out and is able to complete an 8-yard touchdown pass. Without that, who knows what ends up happening. So I think they're both good options.
Who'd you play?
I'd go with Travis.
How about you?
I mean, it's hard to figure out what they're going to do because we aren't in practice. I guarantee that they have a clear answer already based off of how practices went this week. Because, look, Jordan Travis, I've been on his side for the past couple of years with his mobility and everything, but he is making some bad decisions throwing the ball. You know, he had those couple interceptions. So I think they'll start Jordan Travis again, but I wouldn't be surprised if it goes the other way based off of how this week goes.
I'd play Milton. I think he's their quarterback. I think if he's healthy, he's their quarterback. I think he'll be their quarterback, and I think Travis will be a stopgap guy, and we'll see. Noel fans want Mackenzie Milton really for the same reason Florida fans want Anthony Richardson. You know the main reason Florida fans want Anthony Richardson? They haven't seen him be bad yet. We have no idea if he can pass. We have no idea if he's a good passer. Literally no idea. He threw 8 passes. And he may be a very good passer. He may be a terrible passer. Probably not terrible. He may be a good passer, may not be a good passer. But we have no idea whether he can throw the football. But Florida fans want him because they saw the star value, the big play. And it's there. Make no mistake about it. That big play value is there. But they haven't. The main reason the backup quarterback's the most popular guy on the team with the fans, because you usually haven't seen him be bad yet. You've seen the starter be bad, so play the other guy. How do you know he's better? Well, I don't know, but I saw the starter be bad. Let's try the other guy. And I think fans saw the struggle. I'll say this again. If there's two elements in play here. A, Anthony Richardson's there. B, Alabama's coming next week. If Anthony Richardson wasn't on the team, and if Alabama wasn't coming, it was 2 more patsies, nobody would be concerned about Emory Jones. Ah, he'll be better. It was his first start. He'll get better. He did some good things. We're fine. But because of those two elements, the backup guy in Alabama coming, that is why everyone's talking about it. It's going to be a fascinating game, no question about it. All right, take a break. One more segment to go. We're live here at Showtime Sports Cards and Collectibles. Josh Scobie will be in now from 5 to 7, signing autographs for you. What a way to kick off football weekend here, man. Come by Showtime. The best collectible store you've ever been in, this Trevor Lawrence collection is fantastic. Whatever Jaguar it is you care about, I promise you they got stuff. And whatever team it is you care about, I'm looking at all. I can't think of any teams that aren't in here. Some rock and roll stuff as well. Come on by. We're back in a moment. It's 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. But I've been crying. You know who's crying lately? Carl Ann?
The Texans.
Well, not just that, but yes. Me when my beloved baseball teams keep losing. Okay. I mean, I'm trying to lock in on some good squads here. The Pirates are losing. The Yankees are losing. The Astros are losing. Who else did I have? The White Sox are losing. Dang it. But,
you're welcome to cheer for the Braves.
Yeah, I might. Here's a good thing. We're going to have a celebration at the end of the baseball season. You realize that?
No.
We're guaranteed a celebration.
One of your teams is going to win.
Can I tell you why? Because if the Rays win, Brooks is going to celebrate, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, heck yeah.
If any of the other 29 win, I'm going to celebrate. So we're guaranteed a celebration. I mean, you don't get a celebration on every show.
You've got the feel. That's impressive.
I get the feel. You know what? and I still think I'm going to lose. I think I'm going to lose with the field. I really do. Maybe the Dodgers can bring my teams through again. Hey, my Dodgers. Yeah, I've always been a Koufax fan. You remember when Maury Wills used to steal all those bases?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's that, too. So
I love Pedro Guerrero.
Who didn't love Garvey and Say and Lopes and Russell? That was a great infield.
I'll now be kickboxing tomorrow morning, envisioning your face, Frank, cheering against the one team that I like in baseball.
I get it. You know what would be cool, seriously cool? And I don't want to see JT Daniels hurt, but it would be cool if Carson Beck got a whole game. You know, if he got a whole game like this, if he got a whole game against UAB, this guy's waited his turn too, you know. And I might be wrong about this. I had no idea what to expect from Anthony Richardson, and I really still don't. I know he can run really fast, and he's fast and strong and physical. I have no idea if he's a good passer or not. So I didn't know what to expect. Jeff Sims, one of Denny's guys, plays at Georgia Tech. I would have had no idea. I like him, by the way. He's a good player. He impressed me a lot last year. But I think Carson Beck is going to be a really good college player. He looks like an NFL guy to me. He's 6'5", gorgeous throwing motion. He's a tough-nosed kid. I think Carson Beck, when he gets on the field at Georgia, whenever that is, he might be one of those guys that when he gets out there, you may never get him off the field. I think he might be that guy.
Yeah, I think so, too. It'll be so ironic if Georgia had Jacob Eason, this NFL prototype guy, then Jake Fromm comes in and really takes over the job once Eason gets hurt, but then Fromm never lets go of the reins. And then if we have the opposite situation happen, which JT Daniels is more the Fromm guy, but then Carson Beck comes in and then Carson Beck really never gets supplanted, that to me will be fascinating. All that being said, I think they love JT Daniels, so I don't think that's going to happen, but I can't wait to see what Carson Beck can do.
Yeah, me too. And again, I hope JT Daniels isn't hurt. I think JT Daniels is a really good player. And I think they're headed for a really big year. But look, Georgia fan will tell you this too now. I have no doubt that Clemson is really good on defense. But in this day and age of college football, 10-3 games, if you become team 10-3, you're not going to win a championship. Because Alabama isn't team 10-3. And look, I'll say this again. Georgia's got to play at Auburn. Auburn looked pretty good. The right coach might – you know Auburn's got – some good recruits in there. I mean, they've recruited well. This is not like this. This isn't, with all due respect, this isn't Wake Forest or Mississippi State. This is Auburn. So if maybe the Brian Harsin – see, the Brian Harsin hire was so quiet because so much is made of all the other coaches and all the other teams. Nobody even talked much about it. So I keep an eye on Auburn. We said it yesterday. Hayes is long gone on about Mark Stoops, and you might be right about that one. Because with Will Levis there, I'm telling you, they're a problem. Keep an eye on Kentucky. I'll bet you Kentucky gets somebody this year they're not supposed to get. I don't know who, but I know they play LSU, I know they play Georgia, I know they play Florida. I'll bet they get one of them.
I agree. They will not go 0-3 in that stretch.
I don't think so either. They're gonna win one of those games. They will win one of those games.
And it's not going to be the Georgia game.
Yeah.
So Florida, LSU, you better be on notice.
Yes. Yes.
Hey, Kentucky can outscore Georgia the way that we've seen. Yeah. I just don't know about the defense.
But I just think so. I mean, the point is about back to Georgia. You got to be better offensively. And again, Clemson is really good. And other teams, I mean, Florida struggled against a bad team. Georgia struggled against a really good team. And I get that. But you have to be good. It's going to be a very interesting season in college football.
Couple games to keep an eye on this coming weekend. Yeah. I don't know that Oregon, Ohio State does a lot for everybody, but that does kick off at noon an hour ahead of Florida, South Florida. Okay. I do think Texas A&M, Colorado could be interesting because I just don't know how good A&M is. Not saying Colorado's great shakes, and certainly the Pac-12 is not overall. Iowa, Iowa State, that's a top 10 matchup. But the one that I really am intrigued by is Texas, Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. I am too.
How good is Arkansas? You know, that'll be interesting because I don't think Texas is great. Yeah. They struggle.
SEC matchup.
Yeah, it's exactly. Yeah.
Future SEC matchup.
It's an old Southwest Conference matchup that's now an SEC matchup. That's exactly right. I'm like you. I'm intrigued with that. It's not a great Saturday.
No, those are the best games I could come up with.
Yeah, I mean, USC plays Stanford, but it looks like Stanford's no good. You know, so I was hoping Stanford would be better. But Iowa State, Iowa is a great game. It's two top 10 teams, but I'm not feeling it. Is it because they're from Iowa?
Yes.
Yeah. When I need when I think of Iowa, I need baseball and corn.
Yeah.
Okay. Neither one of those.
You could eat corn during the game. By the way, how bad is Alabama going to destroy Mercer?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because he pulls the dogs off so early on those guys it'll probably be like 55-6.
That is such a good point.
I mean, it could be 92-0.
Right, and I don't mean that. But if they're up 27-0 on Miami, I worry about poor Mercer.
But it's
a game that shouldn't be scheduled.
And it shouldn't be,
but they don't tend to put an 82-0 on teams.
And to that end, I don't know how close I'll watch it, although there's not much on at night, so I might. But I'm interested.
That's a 4 o'clocker.
But I'm interested in App State Miami.
Oh yeah,
which is at night, because I mean I
forgot that game.
Yeah, because I'm thinking.
Sorry, Gabe.
I want to, with Florida playing Alabama next week, and with the whole league, with the whole country now worried that Alabama's unbeatable again, I do want to watch and see how good Miami is. With all due respect, Gibby, to App State, who has a really good program for their level, probably the best program at that level. If Miami's what they should be, they should win that game. Now, again, I'm not sure they're going to. I think App State has a legit, legit program at that level. I mean, they've proven that time and again. But if App State beats Miami, makes me wonder if maybe Alabama's not quite as unbeatable. And, again, that's no knock on App State. You know what I mean? I mean, if App State wins the game, then there'll be a side of me that thinks Alabama isn't quite as unbeatable as I think they are right now. Agree with that?
Yeah, it would tell me that Miami has no heart if they lose to App State, because it's like, how do you allow yourself, after getting humiliated by Alabama, how do you not come out and take care of business against App State? And I get it. App State is a good program, but Miami is a better program. Miami has better athletes than App State, and Miami should be breathing fire all week and really ready for that game. If they're not, if App State wins, then that would tell me a lot about Miami's lack of heart. And if Miami doesn't have heart, then it's hard to. I mean, I'm still going to think Alabama is going to convincingly beat Florida, but it would give me some pause on, is Alabama one of the great teams that Alabama's had in this dynasty?
Gibby, I assume that game won't be in our picks. Maybe it will, but
don't make any assumptions.
Okay, then I will not ask you to predict that.
Don't ask me. Gibby, I told you yesterday, maybe stick it in there, right?
This is like the one time that App State can be in the picks. Right. They've got to be in the picks this week, right?
Well,
Gibby, you want them in the picks, don't you?
Sure, yeah. I mean, what was your question, Lauren?
I was just going to ask you to go ahead and predict that game, but don't do it.
Don't do it yet, Gibby. Don't do it yet, Gibby.
I will say this, though. You know, there have been times when we beat North Carolina, when we beat South Carolina in 2019. I wasn't sure before the game if the quarterback play would be good enough to do it, because I wasn't sure if Zach Thomas could get the ball down the field. I'm pretty sure Chase Bryce can get the ball down the field. He threw some dimes against East Carolina. I mean, there's a reason this guy was recruited by Dabo Swinney and David Cutcliffe. So I think if the game's close, he's going to make a throw. I think he can make one.
That's a really good point. This is an App State team that typically is gritty and gutty, but has a legit D1 quarterback. That's a really good point. I hear you. It'll be a fun game to follow. It really will be a fun game to follow. I think
because it's the same Chase Bryce that saved Clemson when Trevor Lawrence went out.
Chase Bryce, by the way, is pretty good.
Yeah.
The problem is he was at Clemson. If Chase Bryce had been at Ole Miss or FSU at the time or NC State, I think Chase Bryce would have had a darn good.
Power
so
he five went from
career.
Clemson, though, to Duke, right, Gibby?
Yes.
He did, and he threw a bunch of interceptions there. But here's the thing.
Okay.
Duke didn't keep him, and Duke just lost to Charlotte. So they might have made a mistake.
And Duke also was probably – sometimes you just you don't fit. He might not have fit there, and they might not have fit him. And, I mean, not everything works. And then with the portal thing – in the past, not everything works, but you don't have any choice but to stay, because you had to sit out a year. No one's going to sit out. Not with the portal, not necessarily.
Am I being unfair to Miami? If Miami loses this game, isn't it just
No, it's not. I get your point. Your point is right. You can't. You have to save face. Yeah, because of how badly you lost to Alabama. No, I don't think you're being unfair. I'm with you. I think if you lose it, but I will tell you, it's not like losing to a bad team. But that's not your point. Your point is you still have more good players than they do. Nobody would debate that. After what happened last week, get up off the deck. I'll tell you this about Miami. Again, I might be wrong. Miami might blow out App State, blow out Michigan State, and still go win 10 or 11 games. And I hope I'm wrong, because I like it when Miami's good. But I'm just being honest. watching them, I was so underwhelmed. And I know how great Alabama is, and it might just be that. That's the beauty of it. We don't really know, you know. But I will tell you this, because it was in our picks and because there was nothing else on, I locked into Michigan State Northwestern. I'm guessing you guys did too. Michigan State's pretty good. Mm-hmm. I mean, Michigan State is legitimately pretty good. Yeah, they rolled Northwestern. That running back, Gordon, is really good. Miami doesn't want to be out three. I mean, I don't think they're going to lose App State. I think they might lose to Michigan State. I mean, that'll dance.
Because that's up there, I think.
Yeah. So that's a really interesting game. I don't know where it is.
I think.
Road game?
I thought it was in East Lansing.
Yeah, it might
that
be. But I know that I was thinking they played in Miami, but they do play. They do play next week. So, all right, that's just about going to do it for our program. Do want to remind you, we're going to stick around here, come by and say hello.
It's at Miami, real quick.
We're at Showtime Sports Cards and Collectibles here on Phillips Highway at the corner of Shad Road. Love to have you come on by. And don't forget, autograph signing, Josh Scobie, the former Jaguar kicker, all-time good guy. He'll be here at 5 o'clock, 5 to 7, to sign all your autographs. Hope you're stopping by to see the good folks here. It's Showtime, Sports Cards and Collectibles. Thanks to our friends at Stanley Pools. Mostly thanks to you for listening. Don't go anywhere, though. Jaguars Happy Hour comes up right now on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. For Hayes, Lauren, and Gibby, I'm Frank Frangie. So long.